Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
It's Jeremy White.
I'm going to have a trail of quarters from here to your car for $10. You're going to pass those 40 quarters, not pick a single one of them up, and then I'm going to take them.
I would rather you give me $3 on one of these apps than you give me $10 in quarters.
Wow. This is not a mindset to become a millionaire.
And Joe DiBiase.
You can't be Captain Crunch unless you are a captain.
Was Captain Crunch an actual captain? What were his, you know, merits?
It's not even captain, actually.
It's Cap'n.
It's Cap'n?
That's right.
Of course he was a captain.
Yeah, I bet he faked the resume.
On Western New York sports giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning. You can see the cup race tonight. It's a billion degrees in this room. It's early in the mornings. So to the YouTube, I'm not sweating right now. But you never know. By the end of this segment, it's possible. A lot of fun stuff to get to. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Jeremy, 8 to 10 today, so have him in a couple of hours. Joe Yurden at 9 o'clock a little bit later on today's show. We'll talk some hockey with him. And, yeah, it's the summer. It feels like the summer, for sure. How's everybody doing this morning? We're doing good. The cup could be raised tonight. So we have that going for us. And I want to talk some hockey a little bit later on this morning. I was driving in though thinking about that, like I got a Sabres topic lined up for today's show, and I'm thinking as I'm driving in, like, do I really want to do that to people? Do I really want to do that to people? What would be the most fun thing to talk about in sports right now? Because it wouldn't be the Sabres, I don't think. Maybe there's a spin we could put on that would make it so, but It's not them.
The first no-hitter in college baseball World Series in 60 years happened yesterday.
Was that? Okay, I saw, you know, who was it? It's one of the Dan Patrick Show guys that always tweets this out, like, college, whatever, ESPN2, get to it now. And I guess I clearly didn't put it on because I didn't know that that happened.
Yeah, Gage
night.
Wood of Arkansas threw the third no-hitter in men's college World Series history.
Okay.
First one in 60 years.
All right, well, we got that. You guys are like decent soccer fans, right? Would you call yourself hardcore soccer fans? No? Josh, you are for Everton.
Yeah.
I know that.
And the U.S. national team when they decide to show up.
I watch a bit. I don't always watch a ton.
Question. This Club World Cup, the FIFA Club World Cup that started yesterday, are we going to care about that? Like, we care about the FIFA World Cup when that comes around every 4 years by a lot. We totally care about that. Everybody cares about the World Cup. Even if you're not a soccer fan, I feel like that's where you might care, right? You might just watch the U.S. games, or maybe you'll watch more than that, whatever. Here's the Club World Cup, which is taking place in Miami. You have teams from the U.S. You have the some of the big English teams. Liverpool's not there. But you have some of the big English teams. But, I don't know, is the tournament a joke? There's a lot of teams there. A lot of top players. Messi's playing.
Well, let me see if this scoreline answers that question for you. Bayern Munich played Auckland City. And
from,
beat them,
from New Zealand?
Yeah, and beat Auckland, them 10-0.
Okay, well, there you go.
In their opening game.
Well, that might be an answer to our question. Right. Why are we throwing teams from around the world in there into the cauldron with the European superpowers that are just going to destroy them all? 10-0?
Yeah.
There wasn't a mercy rule?
Probably not.
There probably should have been a mercy rule of some extent.
Each of these groups has, like, a top team. Like, one group has a bunch of random teams, and then Real Madrid. Another group has a bunch of, well, this one actually has Juventus and Manchester City, which
okay.
That one could be kind of good. But, like, I feel like we're going to be looking at this in, like, a few weeks and say, okay, well, here's all the top teams. They're just basically doing the Champions League.
So maybe right now we don't care, but maybe – right. But even then, when we get to that point, it's like, well, we just had the Champions League. Why do I need this also? So, okay, well, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm skeptical of that succeeding. The idea makes sense, right? Like, the Club World Cup, why not? But – I just don't know that all the teams around the world are gonna stack up. Before we get to some hockey, the NBA Finals last night, I do just want to say that I think both of these series have been awesome. That you've had close games, you have close series, you didn't get a sweep, you haven't had a five-game whatever. I mean, that was the worry for the NBA Finals more than the Stanley Cup Final. I don't think many thought Oilers and Panthers would be a quick series. I think most thought that's going to go the distance. That's going to be back and forth. It's going to be contested. It's going to be physical. This series, though, the Thunder and the Pacers has lived up to the hype. I mean, the Thunder, I think, are still going to win it and probably win it here in six. But, I mean, that was built up to be just a slaughter. Like, it's going to be quick and over. It'll be the Pacers just looking totally outmatched. And even, I mean, this, if you watch that game last night, Halliburton and the Pacers, like, Halliburton had a tough game, only 4 points, as you heard Josh say in the update. But they've been able to compete. The games have been close. All but one of them really has been close. They should have won game four. And that would have put them up 3-1. I mean, they really were half a quarter away of not missing like 10 shots in a row from being up 3-1. And now they're probably going to lose the series, but it's been a good one, and they've put up a good enough fight to make it entertaining. The other thing I had to think of last night about that game and that series, and tell me if this reminds you of anybody in another sport, because I'm sure there are going to be examples of this, but when I watch Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he is the NBA's MVP. Breakout superstar. He's been a star in the league, but like superstar ascension this year. Probably going to win the title. And when they win the title, he's going to win Finals MVP. I think it's a pretty rare company, by the way, to win NBA MVP and Finals MVP in the same year. Like, I don't think that often happens. So, if he wins the title, or if he even doesn't, I think more people have gotten to see him this season than any before just being in the finals. I can't watch the guy. I got into this with Sal a couple of weeks ago. Like, I simply have trouble. There was a 3-minute during the game explanation that ESPN was doing with Mike Breen and Doris Burke, and I forget who's the third voice on that broadcast. Is it Richard Jefferson? Might be Richard Jefferson. They're having a discussion about SGA and push-offs and how every shot looks like a push-off, and they showed an example of the big shot he hit in Game 4, which was clearly a push-off. They even said, I think Jefferson said on the broadcast, like, that's a push-off, that's an offensive foul, but here's why they don't call it. And giving you the defense for why they don't call it. I feel like this guy has a cheat code a little bit. He's figured out the rules. And what are the examples of that in sports where a team has figured out, the Thunder are kind of doing this overall, where they just follow you so often they know it's not going to get called all the time. What are the examples in sports of the guy or the team knows the way around the rule? You know, like, they know, they're winning. This sounds like I'm taking all credit away from him, and I don't mean to be doing that, but they're winning in some part because they're playing off the rule book better than you are. This guy is just hovering around the line on, I could just shove a guy with my stiff arm. He's Derrick Henry out there. Stiff arm a guy on every single shot just to create that little bit of space, and now I have an open shot. You know, I'm thinking of the Seahawks a little bit for this when they won their Super Bowl. Of they would hold on every play, defensively, specifically, like in coverage. The Seahawks held all the time, but they knew the refs aren't going to call it every play. And if we're not egregious about it, you know, they almost, I think maybe this is true, they taught their players how to hold without getting called. And it worked. Their defense was unbelievable, and it did, I think, gave them an advantage. Thinking about the Devils a little bit in the early 2000s with, you know, not the trap, but obstruction and, you know, hooking and interference. Not that they were the only ones doing, weren't the only ones doing that, but, you know, they're doing things that are, by the letter of the law, illegal, but they have figured out what the line is to be able to go right up to it and gain an advantage that way. A little bit of, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, I guess, without, you know, saying they're taking steroids or anything of the sort, because if that's a little bit more different style of cheating. But that's kind of how I feel about this Thunder team. I don't know about an individual star, though. Who's the guy that found the hack in sports? Because that's what I feel like this guy has figured. He found the life hack of, oh, I just give him a little shove as long as I'm not throwing him to the ground, although he did do that in Game 4 and they still didn't call it. But as long as I'm not tomahawking him, choke slamming the guy to the ground, they're not going to call me on it. That's what I feel like this guy's figured out to some extent. So maybe you're able to watch it and not notice it or not care about it, but I have a tough time. I have a real tough time watching him and seeing how successful they are. Good one from Bill, who just wrote in, Juwan Taylor of the Chiefs, who false starts on every single play. That's a good one. Because he, although he's not even really that good with that advantage. And also, he's the number one criminal of that. Don't we kind of feel like now all offensive tackles are leaving like a hair early? Lane Johnson of the Eagles, I feel like I've noticed this of. Dawkins, sometimes I notice it of. I feel like I don't see Dawkins do it all the time, but once in a while I'd be like, oh, he jumped out ahead. So that's a good one. I like that one. Throw one our way if you want. Who's cheating? But just enough so that no one would ever call them out on it. 803-0550 is the phone number. Got a lot of things you can get in on today if you'd like. The Sabres topic, which I'm sorry to bring the mood down here on a sunny, beautiful morning here on a Tuesday in the middle of June. 10 days until the NHL draft. All this comes up really quickly. And then free agency only a couple of days after that. And, hey, like, I was kind of excited for this offseason. A week ago, I was excited for this offseason. It was everybody that has a source, Friedman and Saravelli and Dreger and the French reporter for Renaud Lavoie, who I love saying his name. Who else? All these guys. They all, Pierre LeBrun, they all have been saying the Sabres are looking to do something. They're looking to do something big. They're going to be aggressive. They're calling teams to let them know, hey, we want to do something momentous this offseason. And what do you usually do in the NHL? You wait till the end of the final, so we know we're not getting that until at least the end of this week or probably next week. And then that'll get fired up leading up to the draft in 10 days. So not surprising that nothing's happened yet, and I wouldn't expect anything to happen for at least a few more days, but I was excited. Like, okay, give me something to live for a little bit with this team, even if it's modest. Give me, you know, Ryan McLeod, that was a nice trade last year, right? Give me something that even rates above that, that gets me to check in just a little bit more than, oh, you added a third line center. Okay, all right, nice. So what'd you give up? We could debate about that for, you know, a day. And then, all right, Everything else kind of the same, kind of sort of the same. Because when I hear aggressive, I'm thinking, okay, you're going to be willing to do another trade where you're moving a guy off your team that's important or one of your top prospects or the number 9 pick and package that with a couple of things. And, hey, maybe Bo Byram's going to get traded and you're going to find your way to some upgrade at forward or on the blue line, whatever. Go find that Owen Power partner. Finally. 3 years been waiting for that. Was pumped up. And then you've had a couple of days of this J.J. Paterka report from Friedman, and there was already smoke about it, so it's not out of left field. But Paterka wanting a change of scenery. Friedman saying that people believe that he's unhappy and that he wants out. And then listening to Chopin Bulldog yesterday, I'm hearing them talk about Alex Tuch. And I'm thinking about Paul yesterday on with us talking about Alex Tuch and then the whole core of the team. We'll get to that in a minute. But what Paterka wanting out means, I mean, it does not feel good. It would be another guy that's talented that is just either sick of it or maybe hit for him it's more about, you know, maybe for him it's more about the area and that he wants to live in a big city or he just wants to, you know, maybe he just wants something different for his career. If Alex Tuch is going to want out, and you can rewind back to locker room cleanout day when he did his press conference and he got the layup question of, have you thought about or what are your thoughts on your contract going into the final year of it when you're eligible to sign on July 1st? And Tuch, who, if he was 100% in and wanted to be here long term and felt like it was a matter of time before he would sign a long term extension, that's the easiest question in the world. You just answer it with, oh, I love the area. I love the guys. I want to be here. I want to be a part of the solution. Like, you could answer that question 7 different ways and no one will remember the way you answered it. But the way he did, which was more, I don't really want to talk about it right now, said, I haven't really thought of it. Haven't really thought about it at all. Haven't spoken to my wife about it, which you would assume a guy would do. Just not dismissive of the question, but felt like, I don't want to get into it. Because why wouldn't a guy that has been a leader on this team, has been one of their best players, has, you know, grown up nearby the area and grown up a Sabre fan, why would he not want to discuss, hey, a future with the Buffalo Sabres? Well, potentially, it could be he's not convinced. He's not convinced that this is what's best for his career. And I'm not criticizing Alex Tuch if that is where he ultimately lands. Because honestly, for his career, he's a little older than J.J. Paterka. We're talking about a 6-year gap between the two. Tuch is 29 years old. So this is going to be his last big contract. If he signs for, 6 years or something of the sort, then that takes you to age 35, and that's the big one. You can go somewhere else after that if you're still a good player, but this is your big extension. And in some instances, it might be a decision on where do I want to. I've got half my career left if I'm lucky. Where do I want to spend it? And does the guy, even the guy that grew up watching the 05-06 Sabres and watching Tim Connolly in the 06 playoffs and Dumont and Afinogenoff and Campbell and all these guys, is that guy that grew up with all that say, yeah, I'm good being here forever? Or I want to win a cup? And for any player that's that good, and Tuck is very, very good. I mean, he's scored 36 goals exactly in two of the last 3 years. I just don't know how you could blame a guy for, yeah, I want to win the cup. When I'm done, when I look back on my career in 40 years, I want a picture in my house of me raising the Stanley Cup. I want a ring sitting in a display case somewhere. And how could you possibly right now believe that this is the place that that's going to happen for you? I mean, I don't know what his relationship or what any of those players' relationships would be like with people in the front office and Adams and what the relationships are like with Lindy Ruff, but I don't think it's a leap at all for a 29-year-old player that is as good as he is to say, do I want to keep going in circles and maybe one time this wheel will spit us out into the playoffs, or we'll just go around forever, as opposed to I could go be a part of something that's going to compete for championships. There was a report at the deadline that Tampa was interested in Tuck. And if I'm Tuck, or Tuck's agent, and knows, like, oh, Tampa, that's one team. There'll be no shortage of contenders that are going to want a 6'4" scoring winger that led the league in shorthanded goals and has, what is it, 66 games of playoff experience from before when he was in Buffalo. Who wouldn't want that guy? What contender wouldn't want that guy? It's why Tampa reportedly did want him. Florida might be out of room, out of spaces on the board. But almost anywhere else, you probably could get a look. So going and winning championships versus, well, this is the team that I grew up with, and I'm sure he has a desire to turn it around. I think anybody would that has an emotional tie to the team, but how long does that go? And all this is to say, like, I think there is a real chance, and I have a real worry that Tuck might be going into the final year of his deal without the really, I don't know how good the chances are of him actually re-upping with the Sabres. I'm worried about it. Him more than Paterka, by a lot. I am worried about Tuck wanting to leave because I wonder what that starts to look like. If he wants to go, the guy with the emotional tie to the team from before he was even here, is that the first domino? The first real big domino to fall? Paul yesterday said, just in his own guesstimation and his opinion, that if they are bad again this season, then that could be it for all of them. That how or is Dahlin, is Tage going to be able to say, I'm willing to keep going here? Now, they're under contract, so that's a little bit different than the Tuck situation, but are we on the verge of firing back up another stage of suffering and another rebuild? Or retool, call it whatever you want. Another flood of talented players that are just, they're done. They've had enough. I'm out. I don't know how far away we are, but when Paul says that, I don't think he's wrong. And if I were trying to figure out, yeah, how much more do they have, I think I might agree with him. That I might feel like if they don't do it this season, these guys are going to start filing out one by one. And what this fan base has already gone through for this amount of time and wanting to believe that there's something here to build on – if they start filing out one by one, I don't know what that's going to look like. It feels like the team can't sink any further than it already has with its fans. And if that starts happening again, I don't know where we are. I don't know what they do. I feel like they're lost at sea, and there's no hope if that is to start happening. And it really, if that is in the back of your mind, like it is in the back of my mind right now, that, hey, all of that could be the case in a year, then it really ratchets up the importance of this season. If you believe, like, okay, we're nearing the end here of the emotional toll that some of these guys can take, the amount of losing that these guys could take, you should really call it, then that makes this year all the more important. 803-0550 is the phone number. What I really wanted to get into, and what we will, is on the Sabres. If you have already checked out on them, what was the moment? What was the moment you checked out on the Sabres? And if you haven't, would this core wanting out be the final straw for you? Let me know what you think. Talking a little bit of hockey today. We'll get some football as well. The Panthers tonight and the Oilers. Game 6, Florida can win it. Back-to-back cups is on the line for them. And Edmonton trying to force a Game 7 back in their barn. Joe Yurdin's coming up at 9 o'clock. Jeremy's going to be along at 8. So a lot to get to. We have plenty of time for your phone calls in the next segment. Some trivia along the way as well. Have a lot of fun here on WGR.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Turns it over, and that'll do it. The Oklahoma City Thunder now one win away from an NBA title. They'll try and clinch it on the road in game 6. A playoff gem from Jalen Williams. Tyrese Halliburton, the Pacers, a strong comeback, but the Thunder have the answer. It's 3-2. OKC in front here in the NBA Finals.
Thunder are one win away from the NBA championship. Jason Williams was awesome last night. Jalen Williams, thank you. Did I see Jason Williams something recently? The elbow pass probably was on my TikTok last night. Anyways, 3-2 favor of OKC. Let's watch some of the highlights up there right now. See, Williams, I like watching Williams play. I know I kind of ranted about them in general, but a lot of that's SGA for me. Williams is fun. I mean, he's hitting step-back shots. He's hitting Dirk post moves down the stretch of that game. Yeah, I like him a lot. Tonight's game, I'm pumped for tonight's game. I don't want it to end. I really don't want it to end. I love this series between Florida and Edmonton. I know we've had a couple of downers, these two games in the last three that have been more closer to blowouts than back-and-forth affairs. That series gives you everything you need. The one thing that is very different about hockey than basketball culture right now and the way they're talked about is I still feel like rings culture hasn't infected hockey the way it has other sports. Because if it was all about rings and it was, and maybe you think I'm wrong about this, is McDavid gonna get criticism for this series? Because I think the answer to that is no. I think hockey fans are smart enough to know this dude is the best player in the world and we don't need to have months of debates about, you know, his legacy at 28 years old. The reason I would even mention that is he only has one goal in the series, and the goal came when they were down three late in game five, and he has only 2 points in his last three games. I say only 2 points, but, I mean, this is McDavid, right? The standard for McDavid is you get 2 or 3 points a game, not 2 points over the course of three games. So him not putting up the big numbers while they are falling to Florida, I think in the NBA, in the NFL, the star player falling a little bit short of the bar like that would get criticized. And I just don't think that really is in the cards because of it being hockey. And it's also that maybe there is an understanding that how different the sports are, in that McDavid's only on the ice for a third of the game. If he's on the ice for half the game, it's insane. So a third of the game. Whereas, you know, the quarterback is out there for half of it, and the NBA player is out there for 80% of it. So maybe that's why it would be a little bit more fair to point to the one individual, like, hey, you let us down. You didn't show up in the big moment. McDavid, I think, has played fine. He just hasn't been putting up the numbers. But I don't, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't expect there to be this cry out for, oh, this guy, you know, he's no king. What did he do in the finals? I mean, really, you go to the playoffs before that, and you can just look. The guy's got 33 points in 21 games. It's not like he really was playing that poorly before these last three games, or wasn't putting up the numbers before these last three games. So I like that about hockey, though. I like that, for the most part, like, we're not going to be having these big legacy debates about McDavid until, you know, maybe in 7 years, if he still hasn't won, and he's 34. 35, and that's still the case, that he hasn't won a championship, then maybe that changes a little bit. Because really, I pointed this out, that all these star players in the NHL, Crosby, Ovechkin, and before that, Lemieux and Gretzky, and, you know, all the superstar players of the league, they usually get their, ring. They get there. And I would still have a belief that McDavid will. It would be unique, I think, if he was to go his entire career or almost entire career without winning one.
Don't you think that conversation is decided entirely in these next two games? Like, what he does in Game 6 and Game 7, if it gets there, will dictate how people talk about how he performed here?
You mean like if he goes out tonight and has a dud, a zero?
Right. If they go out tonight and he one assist, one secondary assist on the power play, and they lose 3-2, I think people will talk about McDavid as not really I think that this series is about the best team we've seen, I think, in a long time in Florida,
right,
versus McDavid and Draisaitl. And can they elevate what they do to a point where they can overcome what Florida throws at them?
I think the other thing that maybe could help him kind of skate on all of that, no pun intended, is the team that he's playing.
Right.
Right? It is, you're an all-time player, but it does feel like you get a little more of a pass when everybody understands that you're going up against an all-time team.
Yeah.
And I'm not wrong, right? Florida, I mean, they've got to get this thing home, but that's an all-time team.
That team, I don't think it can be overstated how just every aspect of what that team does, every level of their build from Zito down to Maurice, their training, like, everything that organization does right now is the lined meat. Every organization in the league should be trying to replicate what's going on in Florida culturally, strategically, and roster building wise, I think.
I was going to say how their front office runs. I mean,
exactly.
They've got something for everybody. They really have something for everybody. Like, I know we talk a lot about how the Panthers are just perfect in all these different ways, but I saw a story yesterday from Jeff Merrick, who was on a podcast, where he said that the Panthers, like, they're tough and they're gritty and there's the culture there, and then also they're an extremely analytics heavy team.
I saw that too, and I find that so interesting.
Yeah,
because it's such a, people think of that team as like
very differently,
tough, mean team.
Right.
They are that, but they're also, like you said, like they're Zito doesn't do anything without.
That's what he said. He said Bill Zito will not make a move without approval from his head of analytics, Sonny Mehta.
Right, which I think people who don't know that about them, maybe their heads would fly off if they hear that.
Because, well, isn't that how they arrive at Evan Rodriguez is good enough to be a top six player for us, and Gustav Forsling is going to be a top four defenseman for us. These guys that other teams didn't really value in the same way, and they see more in there. Maybe even Reinhardt is a greater example of that.
Bobrovsky, even like signing him to that deal, is a risk that they took that they could have tried to get out from.
Right.
And they recognized a big story with them when they got good was they figured out how to maximize Bobrovsky in terms of studying his recovery data. And they realized he plays twice as well after he has rest and when he can rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed how Bobrovsky's performed for them. He was a disaster the first couple years of that contract, to the point where they were like looking to get off of it. And now that's insane to even think about. He's a top five, top seven goalie in the league at this point with the performances he's given the last three years. It's incredible.
Completely shed the playoff, can't do it in the playoffs mantra that he kind of had. They do have all these examples of, this guy, we got him here. We thought there was more in there. The underlying numbers liked him more than a lot of teams did. And we bet on that, and we ended up being right. They have so many examples of that. That maybe is one of my smaller disappointments about the Buffalo Sabres, is when they built this front office in the shadow of all those firings during COVID, and they kind of tore apart the hockey department and the whole organization, and they hired some people around Kevin Adams, the some people I was excited about. Like, hey, they're bringing in Jason Karmanos.
And Nightingale.
And more than that, like Sam Ventura, who led the analytics department in Pittsburgh and built that. You know, I've got these. That really was what it was. It seemed to me that spending less money, one of the maybe positive consequences of that was going to be it's cheaper to be a data-driven team than a team that's flying, you know, eight scouts to nine different countries and every different state all around the world. If you're trying to do it cheap, I was thinking, well, maybe that'll lead them to, you know, the data, maybe to more of these guys are having more of an influence in the organization. And I guess I don't want to say they don't have an influence. I just wonder what the influence is like, how data driven, how analytical they really are. Cause I don't really see a lot of examples of it. I mean, who's the Sabres story of, usually it goes the other way, who's their guy that they bet on and said, the league doesn't think this guy is as good as we do. We're going to bring him here, and he's going to be better than he ever has been. I think there's one. There's at least one. Ryan McLeod.
Oh, yeah.
They traded more for Ryan McLeod than anybody thought he was worth. And everybody went, oh, well, you traded your best prospect for Ryan McLeod, who was on the fourth line in Edmonton, and his career high in goals was like 11. And the Sabres said he had some good underlying numbers, especially defensively. And they made a bet and said, this guy's better than that. And then he got here and he was better than that. Yeah. So there's one. But like I don't know that I need more. Maybe there's another one I'm missing, but I don't see another one that I can really think of.
There's not one top of mind like that.
Yeah. 803-0550, the phone number. If you want to give us a call on like what was the moment you checked out on the Sabres, feel free, because I've got some tweets and some texts that I want to read about this, and a lot of them are, if you haven't yet, maybe Tuck wanting out would be the one that did it. 803-0550, the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We're going to do a lot of stadium reminiscing over the next year as we get into the new stadium. Last night, Matt Bove, who we had on yesterday on the show, WKBW, they did their first episode of, I think he's calling it Fandemonium, is the name of the series. Lead the Charge, 52 Years of Fandemonium. Yesterday was the first episode going back to when the stadium was built and a little bit in the 70s and the 80s and seeing some of the old pictures of the stadium. It looks like such a different stadium when it was first built, Highmark Stadium, or then Rich Stadium, where the scoreboard was smaller and the, I don't know, like there's no building on top of the seats, like you see now, where they have billboards up on top of all of those different sections, you know, behind the end zones. And it looks, it almost looks like a completely different stadium in some of those pictures. But it's really cool to see the beginnings of the stadium, the construction pictures. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun in the next year reminiscing, and especially the memories that you have that maybe don't come right to mind for everybody else. Because 51-3 and the perfect game against New England, those are going to be in the comeback game. Those are going to be the top three. You know, Mount Rushmore days at that stadium. But I remember having the junior hockey outdoor game like 10 years ago. And I remember a Bills-Cardinals game and a Bills-Vikings game where I met Lindy Ruff for the first time as a kid. Just everybody's going to have, you know, their own stories to tell. And I think over the next year, it's going to be great. And Matt's got Joe DeLaMalier in there and Joe Ferguson, Marv, of course, Mary Wilson. So it's a cool series. Looking forward to seeing the next episodes coming out too. 803-0550, the phone number. Where did you check out? When did you check out on the Sabres? And will Alex Tuck leaving, if he were to do that, be the final straw? What about this whole core doing it? A lot of hockey stuff to get to on the Sabres. And the football world, I think, is starting to crown Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson as being better than Patrick Mahomes. Another football analyst yesterday like wants you to know, I don't think Mahomes right now is the best quarterback in the league. So I feel like we're on our way to a lot of quarterback debates in the next month while these teams are off, and I think it's centered around Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. 803-0550, the phone number. A little bit of that coming up as well here on WGR.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.